Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited
by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Lucky Land Casino. Asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello and welcome to the Terrace Scottish Football Podcast. My name is Craig Telfer and today I am joined by my close associate, Sean McGuigan.
Hello there.
We are, of course, the mega powers of the Terrace and we are back once again to take a look at the fag end of Scottish football. Now, Craig Anderson and Robert Borthwick might have cast their eyes over the glitz and the glamour of the League Cup on Monday, but you won't find that kind of stardust here. No, we are going to be poking around in the trash like a pair of starving raccoons, hoping to find something we can salvage and discuss from the action in League One and League Two last weekend. And of course, Sean, as normal, we are going to be talking about three games, including Edinburgh City's win over Stenhousemuir and Annan Athletic's barnstorming victory over Stirling Albion. But first, we are going to start in a hole. That's right, we're going to Cumbernauld, where Clyde picked up the 3 points against Alloa Athletic. David Goodwillie opened the scoring just before the hour mark with a bullet header. And although Stephen Scougal's precise finish drew parity 13 minutes later, Goodwillie won his side the match with a supreme individual effort right at the death. Now, Sean, I was at Broadwood for this match, but I'm keen to hear your thoughts about this. What did you make of this game?
When I watched it back, I'd presumed that from what I'd read that Alloa were poor, but it had been not necessarily a smash and grab victory for Clyde, but maybe slightly unwarranted and undeserved. I think it sums up where Clyde are, if you want to discuss them first. I think Clyde can probably, every now and again, turn up and not be very good, but David Goodwillie will dig them out of a hole and get them out of trouble. And you've seen it. You've seen it for a couple of seasons now. Clyde don't necessarily have to be good to avoid relegation. As long as David Goodwillie is quite good, then they will probably avoid relegation. And this game probably sums up what Clyde are about at this moment in time.
I think so, Sean. As we described Clyde on a few occasions as David Goodwillie and 10 other cunts, and I really think that was hugely apparent at this game on Saturday. I think if you just jump back a couple of days to their midweek game against Broomhill in the SPFL Trust Cup, that was a massive embarrassment for them going out to the lone league side. I mean, this is not a good Broomhill or BSC Glasgow side. This is a team who are very likely are candidates to be relegated from the lone league this time around, which is good. I think the country can agree on that beyond a couple of people. So notably, that was actually without David Goodwillie in the team. But watching him on Saturday, you can He's just miles ahead of anything on the pitch, and I include Aloha in that. Just his speed of thought, his movement, his strength, his physicality, the way he uses his body. And I was looking at his stats on Wikipedia. It's something like 80 goals in 120 odd games for Clyde, which is absolutely incredible. And when you watch him play, you can see why sides like Falkirk and Inverness Caledonian Thistle, I think they've been rumoured to have been taking a look at it in the past. You can see why they'd want to do that. Of course, you really have to put Goodwillie into context, of course. In January 2017, he was found guilty of rape in a Scottish civil court. So on the balance of probabilities, he's a rapist. And that's why he is playing at a level at Clyde. But just to talk about him as a football player, fantastic. And the two goals that he scored in this game were incredible. One, the bullet header, and secondly, the individual effort that won in the game. Talk me about those goals, Sean.
They were both excellent finishes. I mean, his first goal, I would say for both goals, though, he probably took advantage of poor defending at both. I mean, for the first goal, as much as it was a great header from I think it was a Ross Cunningham cross, but he got in front of Fernando Mendy to kind of bullet his header past David Hutton. A brilliant finish, but Mendy was poor at that moment. Mendy looked like he was poor in general, judging by what he saw. I was interested to see how Mendy gets on this season, but he looks like League One might be beyond him, as much as the Championship was beyond him. Second goal, I mean, to score from, I mean, it gets the ball out wide and you see Andy Graham jogging over and you think, right, well, it doesn't look like there's too much danger here. Just shepherd him to the byline. I'll probably be okay. And then he actually gets to the byline, but then Andy Graham probably goes down a wee bit early and probably too far away from him. And it just allows, he kind of slides in, but he's probably 2 yards away for Goodwillie when he slides in. And he just gives him the opportunity to jink past him. But his finish from an acute angle that, again, maybe David Hutton could have done better, but it was so powerfully struck, so sweetly struck then. I would probably give Hutton the benefit of the doubt. But you can criticise the defending, but it was two finishes that the quality of which you don't generally see in League One.
No, I agree with you. I think that the first one, watching it in the ground, I thought that's fantastic movement to just like, I thought he sprinted across the penalty box to meet Ross Cunningham's cross, but he was quite static actually. It's just that he sort of steps in front of Mendy, and it's no less a fantastic finish. I mean, it's a really good goal. The second one, I think that with Graham sliding in like that, I mean, it's no secret I'm a big fan of Andy Graham, so I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt here. And I think that him going to ground like that was, you weigh up your options and that, and you think, well, you've got Craig Howie's coming to cover, Mark Dornan's just over his shoulder, and he's at such an acute angle, he's going to have to do something really special here to beat David Hutton. And that's sure enough, that's what he does. I mean, it's a tremendous finish. I think that just to have the speed of mind to just think, well, you know what, the best thing, just absolutely put the laces through it, and to be able to hit it with that power and that accuracy from that angle, it's just phenomenal. And like, Clyde didn't really have that many chances. He didn't carve Aloha open that often. Certainly, I mean, they did create chances, but nothing was particularly clear cut. But that when they did, it just all came through David Goodwillie, and just like I say, miles ahead of everything else in the pitch. I think he won that game for Clyde, no doubt about it. I know that's a stupid thing to say because he got the two goals, but I was thinking of the other Clyde players that played well. I thought Cunningham showed a couple of nice touches. I think Morgaro Gomez in the middle of the park was one of the few players to really try and put his foot in the ball and carry the team forward. Sometimes unsuccessfully, so he was sometimes caught out, but he was always looking to take the team forward. And Kevin Nicol, well, you know what Kevin Nicol's like. He's just a big bruiser in the middle of the park that'll just put himself about and get toes in there. So these guys played their part, but it was definitely David Goodwillie's match.
Do you think that Clyde are going to have enough about them to stay up? Because as much as they got the 3 points for this game, and as much as the fans presumably went home happy, I thought for the bulk of the game, in general, they looked like they were second best. And you're still expecting them to be in a clutch of sides at the bottom of the league. Now what those other teams will be in that clutch, I'm not entirely sure. Maybe them, maybe East Fife, maybe Peterhead. but they still have something that, that those teams don't, and that's somebody who'll probably score 20 league goals.
The interesting thing, Sean, after Alloa scored, Stefan Skugel scored, I think it was about 72 minutes, and they had changed formation by this point. We'll come on and talk about Barry Ferguson and how they started the match, but they changed formation to something orthodox and something that I think the players were comfortable in and the players could understand. And Stefan Skugel was really taking control of that game. He was sort of playing as the, really just the number 10, playing as the, I'm loath to use the term trequartista when I'm talking about Scottish League One football, but I'm going to use it anyway. He was playing as the trequartista role just in behind Conor Salmon up front, and he really was pulling the strings, getting some really nice touches in there. And when they scored for the final 10 minutes, certainly, it really was all Alloa. And again, they weren't really doing anything clear cut. It was a lot of heavy pressure on Clyde without creating any openings. And I do think Clyde deserve an element of credit for the way they defended it and were able to keep Alloa at bay. But if anyone was going to score, it was going to be the Wasps. And so for like David Mitchell to just hout the ball up the park, it'd find its way to Goodwillie, and then for it to find its way into the back of the net, I don't think that was something that anyone suspected. I don't think Alloa necessarily deserved to win the game. I think a draw was probably the fairer result at the end, but it doesn't matter. Fundamentally, they had all that pressure and didn't come away with anything. So I suppose if you were a Clyde supporter, you'd be like, that was great. The 3 points were fantastic. And I think it's a huge result for Danny Lennon after the defeat to Broomhill. But yeah, it's still very much a case of we must protect our striker at all costs. I don't think there'll be many other teams in that league who have I don't think there's any other teams in the division who are so reliant on one player as Clyde are on Goodwillie.
And I think it probably sums up, well, certainly the difference on the day in terms of who was the man leading the line for both teams. So for Clyde, you had David Goodwillie. And then for Alloa, you had Conor Salmon. That I think there was at least two, maybe three occasions in the highlights where he attempted to control the ball in his chest. Now, you know how generally if you bring the ball down in your chest, it's normally it's like kind of cushioned effect. That's generally where you're going to bring it down and then it'll drop at your feet and then you'll kind of charge on. But it's almost like his chest is made of the same material as a trampoline. Because it just bounces off him. And then there was a point in the first half where it was a really good ball over the top and Salmon was running through. And he's not a slouch. I mean, he's reasonably quick. Mm-hmm. And he controlled the ball on his chest. And you're like, right, you're in here. But actually, it bounced off his chest. And then he just chased it out of play. But there was at least another couple of times where it just bounces off him. It just does not stick. It must be, from an Alloa fan's perspective, it must be, well, I find them quite infuriating to watch. Yeah. And I'm not an Alloa fan.
You know something, when I was watching Sam, because I know that he got a hard time from Falkirk supporters last season, and I was actually playing five-a-sides with a couple of Falkirk fans last night and was talking to them about Conor Salmon, having seen him at the weekend, and they said that he would, his good games came around like one every eight or nine, and in those games you'd be like, well, that's the sort of player that we're looking from you. But I mean, you can't, for someone who's going to be your principal striker going into the season, you really need more from him. I was watching him on Saturday and I didn't get a chance to see him in the flesh playing for Falkirk. But you're watching him and you're thinking, right, Wigan paid £600,000 to you to sign you for Kilmarnock. Hearts of Midlothian gave you a 3.5-year contract when they signed you. Was it for Derby they signed him? Certainly, Hearts, he got a good contract for his time at the JTs. And you think, right, what is it about you that has seen these clubs invest so heavily in you? Because you see that when players drop down a level, sometimes I've always said I'm quite sceptical about how players like taking the plunge and how they can adapt it. But you always get like flashes, even if they're not very good, you get flashes of that quality that encourage teams to put that kind of outlay on them. I didn't see anything from Salmon to suggest that. I think, as you say, he's quite quick off the mark. Even at the age of 34, he's still got a good wee burst of pace in him over short distances. And he's quite strong. You know, he's got really, really broad shoulders and he's got quite a big arse, so he can back into players. In terms of his technique, though, there was one bit in the first half He got the ball. I think it might have been Scott Taggart played the ball into him, 10 yards, quite a hard pass, and he tried to control it with his instep, and the thing went 5 yards. It was almost like he was like volleying it back to Taggart. And again, another bit I think you highlighted, he got the ball clipped into him. This is in the second. I think this is when the scores were 1-1. Ball clipped into him, controlled it, and then tried to hit the thing in his left foot on the half volley as it was coming down, and just shanked it into the stand, and people were laughing at him. I know this player left the club prior to Ferguson coming in, but Robert Thompson, who left the club in the summer, who's gone to Stennis Muir, who we'll come on and talk about. But like, if you wanted to play that kind of football, should have kept Thompson, because Thompson's, what I've seen, Thompson's a far better player than Connor Salmon, and I imagine he'd be on a more modest wage. But I think that's certainly a position that Aloha need to address. But I actually think that Aloha have got a number of positions that they need to address based on that performance.
I think not for the first time, you probably have to question Barry Ferguson's recruitment, because I was surprised they went for Salmon. And I mean, bear in mind that Salmon was playing for Falkirk, who were the favourites for that division 2 years in a row. He couldn't score goals for a full-time team in a part-time league. I didn't expect him to then start scoring goals for Alloa in that league either. I don't think he's going to have more opportunities to score goals for Alloa than he did at Falkirk, and he was wasteful at Falkirk. And then on top of that, guys like Mendy, who we've already mentioned, who I didn't think was going to be good enough for Alloa. Adam King, who was just like anonymous on loan at Raith Rovers. I don't think he was particularly great.
It's quite interesting you talk about Adam King there. I only, like, I, at Broadwood, I didn't get the teams, so I was trying to bring them up on my phone, and I didn't get them because I couldn't get them. The 4G wasn't working in Broadwood. It was only till Adam King was substituted that I realised he was playing. No impact whatsoever on the game. No impact whatsoever. But it's interesting, the players that you've touched on there, I think it's worth talking about. The Mendy is certainly one. Mendy was really poor. Like really poor. Probably one of the worst performances I've seen a player have this season. And when you see him, you think he's just going to be a no-nonsense defender, someone that will just like a stopper, can head the ball, just protect the penalty box, make sure that ball's nowhere near it. And I think I've seen somebody say, I may have been in Pine Bovril, it may have actually been a discussion with yourself, in fact, that he's been partnered alongside Andy Graham. Andy Graham will just talk him through the games. Andy Graham will keep him right. But Andy Graham, I'm sure, isn't telling him to dribble 30 yards into a Clyde player, you know, and give the ball away. But he did that about two or three occasions. It's like trying to dribble out of defence, which I'm sure is progressive. That's what Ferguson will be looking for from you. But to just give it away. And then there was other times as well, I think, that Goodwillie sussed him out quite early on and would drift left. They were playing a back three, so it was Dernan, Graham and Mendy. Goodwillie was drifting wide left to basically hang on the shoulder of Mendy. So there's times when the ball was clipped into the channel for him, he would stand Mendy up, take him one way, take him the other, put him in his arse and come inside. The highlights didn't show that, but there was a number of times that he did that, and Mendy just didn't deal with it. And you saw him for the opening goal, allowed Goodwillie to nip across him. And I remember thinking that Mendy might have the qualities to play as effectively just a patrol in the defence, sit him in front of the back four and do that. I'm not sure. I've just not seen anything from him. And I know that I don't like slagging players off. And I know that he's supposed to be a really, really lovely guy and someone who really seems to have really enjoying his time in Fife and was well thought of, quite well, a popular player at the...
He was a cult hero. He was a cult player at Raith Rovers, and he was well thought of at Kelty Hearts. However, I don't think Kelty Hearts had to do a lot of defending in the Lowland League.
No, he's going to be in the front foot a lot of the time, and he certainly won't have come up against anyone as good as Clyde's number nine. But they played, the formation they played, it was like a 3-4-2-1, probably actually verging on a 3-5-1-1. So you had that back three there. You had Scott Taggart playing at wing back, Scott Boyd playing at left wing back, a position that I thought Scott Boyd, somebody might need to correct me here, but I thought Scott Boyd was just like an orthodox striker.
Yeah, so did I.
Yeah, never a wide player. Midfield three of Adam King, who, as we mentioned, didn't influence the game at all. Craig Howie, who, after Mendy's performance, might be better utilised as part of that defence.
Well, what I was going to say about Howie was, so I spoke about Howie after the League Cup game that Alloa played at Raith Rovers, and I thought they were solid. And Howie and Andy Graham were the two centre-halves, and they were excellent. But since then, Howie has played at right-back in one of the games, then on Saturdays played in the middle of the park. Mm-hmm. And again, it's one of these things where Barry Ferguson, he likes to tinker and he likes to play with things and he likes to change things. And you sometimes feel it's all very unnecessary.
That's the feeling I got. That's absolutely feeling that I got. I mean, I think one of the big problems that he's had is that after Liam Dick left the club and joined the Rovers, they don't have a... I don't think they've got a proper left back. Daniel Church isn't a left back, is he? Might need to... I don't think so. No, you're screwing your face up there. Daniel Church probably isn't a fullback. So the change that they made was that they took off Mendy, they brought on John Robertson, and just went to an orthodox sort of back four. It was a back four. And that's something I can't understand. Like, why, if you've got a player as good as John Robertson, why would you not play him? Like John Robertson is very experienced, very professional, very versatile player, you know, like not nominally a central midfielder, but had played as a right back for a lot of time. And the classic Coca-Cola Alloa defence, you know, when it was Dick, Graham, Taggart, Robertson. Robertson came on at left back and looked really assured. And I know that it's not as necessarily his position, but he can fill in there. Play him for the time being, go and try and get a left back and loan from someone, and just keep things simple, because just whatever they were doing, just it didn't suit anyone. The only players who I think looked comfortable in that system were Skubal as number 10 and Mohamed Niang, who they brought in alone from Partick Thistle. He didn't really do much, but at least he looked quite comfortable in that sort of number 8 role, going like sort of the box-to-box formation. But playing like a 3-4-2-1 or a 3-5-1-1, whatever way you want to try and spin it, it just didn't suit players. And you think, why not look at your squad, try to think, right, I've got this team of players, what are they best at doing? Fit them into that position and then go and make the changes to think, well, I don't really want to play this way. Then you can maybe think about bringing other players in. It just didn't really seem to make much sense to me. And I think that Ferguson is already off to a bad start at Alloa. And this is probably before a ball was even kicked, because I think a lot of people in Scottish football, outside of Rangers fans, won't like Barry Ferguson purely because of his connections to Rangers and the fact that he's on the radio and writing in the papers about Rangers. That's fundamentally his job away from coaching, and that can rub people up the wrong way. And I think he was a surprise appointment at Alloa as well, that a lot of fans might not necessarily have taken to. So there's a lot of external factors are already against him. And then you're sort of exacerbating it by playing this wacky brand of football that doesn't seem to have the tools that you've got. And I can understand that Alloa fans would be a bit worried by the fact that previously we had a good squad of players, albeit one that was relegated, that perhaps needed a bit of freshening up. But you're not freshening it up. Instead of putting a pine tree in the car, you're putting a big sack of potato peels in the car instead.
I mean, I watched the game against, I watched the win against East Fife. I thought to a degree, I thought they're probably the better team against East Fife, but to a degree they were a wee bit fortunate. I thought East Fife had spells in that game where they were dominant, and for a spell it looked like it was more likely East Fife would get an equaliser rather than Alloa would end up getting a third goal for the win. But I did think I suppose Alloa fans are now pinning their hopes on... So they've still got two key players that are out injured. So Alan Troughton missed out at the weekend. Kevin Colley missed out again at the weekend. So you would presume that those two players coming back will make a difference. I did think it was an interesting comment on Pine Bovril, where for a lot of years now, Alloa have received plaudits for always making good managerial choices. But you look at Peter Grant, who obviously went down with them last season. I don't know if Peter Grant, I had my doubts about Peter Grant when he was appointed Dunfermline boss. He might turn things around. That's pretty early in the season. It might be that Peter Grant actually is a good manager, but I don't know if he's a good manager. Barry Ferguson had his spell at Clyde. He's had his spell at Celtic Hearts. I don't know if Barry Ferguson's a very good manager. Well, I think we'll find out this season, but I don't know if Alloa have been making good managerial choices for the last couple of seasons.
No, you know something, I think it's when you think of Alloa, you go back, Alan Maitland had been at the club a long time, so I think that for a lot of people, it will be the appointment of Paul Hartley back in 2000 and... when they were relegated, that would have been 2011, they were relegated. That was 2011, they were relegated into the old third division, and Paul Hartley was appointed manager. Since then, Paul Hartley, they've had Barry Smith, Danny Lennon, not fantastic managers there. Like Jim Goodwin, obviously, and Jack Ross, Peter Grant, no, because they were relegated, and Barry Ferguson, the jury's still out. So I'd say that their managerial record's probably just as good and as bad as every other team's, you know, where you've got, yes, some gems. Well, there's three managers that have gone on to kick up, which is, I suppose, for a part-time team, that's exactly what you want. But then you fucking hired Barry Smith, you know? So let's keep it in perspective. But I do fear for them a little bit. I think that Ferguson does have his work cut out. And I think that you're right. When you get a guy like Alan Troughton back in and Kevin Collar, there's not many teams could do without as creative and as talented and as technical players as them. But based on that evidence on Saturday, they looked fairly uninspiring. A formation that didn't really suit them. A goalkeeper who I don't particularly rate. I think Hutton, there was one bit you could see it in the highlights. I think that Goodwillie went in for Andy Graham challenged Goodwillie, and Goodwillie sort of controlled the ball with his hands, and the referee, he was coming up, he was getting on his knees and pushed the ball forward with his wrist. The referee gave a foul, and then David Hutton comes steaming out and pushes him
He's very angry.
What are you so aggressive for? And weirdly, I saw Neil Parry was in the stands. Now, Neil Parry is someone I did a Pelly podcast with and someone whose telephone number I have and who I have texted for advice in the past about doing podcasts with other players. I saw him, I looked up as if to say all right to him, and I got patched. And I don't know if he saw me or not. I'd like to think he didn't, but that was a mortifying experience in Broadwood. I was there myself as well, and that was mortifying.
That must have been a real blow to morale. A guy that you spent, two or three hours?
Yeah.
Just kind of like across a desk, and he just totally ignored you.
Yeah, he might not have seen me. He might not have seen me, but maybe he did. And was like, "Fuck, there's that flabby jobber for that rubbish podcast." This guy will be asking me why I've been dropped. I'm not going to speak to him. I'm just going to pretend that I've never seen him. But I don't understand why you would. It seems like a big downgrade going from Neil Parry to David Hutton. And Clyde, as we mentioned, Clyde will. Keep Goodwillie fit, you've got a chance. If Goodwillie's not fit, as you saw against Broomhill, then they're in bother. But I can't imagine any of these sides being involved in the top four discussion at any point. Well, maybe Alloa, but certainly not Clyde.
I don't think Alloa will, unless there is a big turnaround in their fortunes. And I think Colley will make a difference to this team, and I think Troughton will make. I like Troughton. But his age now, a lot of his goals come from the penalty spot. And I don't know how many of his goals, and I'm saying that without actually checking back, so that could be a load. It feels like a lot of his goals come from the penalty spot. So again, whether he's going to score goals from an open play, I'm not sure. And again, you kind of think to yourself, is Ferguson going to drop Conor Salmon? The fact that he's signed him, he seems to like to go into teams and then have a real kind of clearing of the decks and bring in his own players. And I don't always think that's wise.
I think you just need to look at his time at Clyde, where he must have burned through about 100 players. I think it was about 100 players in 2.5 years. I think that he's got, it doesn't seem to have the best patience. I think in the players he's got and the sort of style of football that he wants to get from them, because referenced it before the podcast with Scott McLaughlin, who played under him, Pelly podcast, Scott McLaughlin, who played under him at Clyde. spoken about the changes that he made and the lack of patience he has in players. It was quite interesting because knowing that anytime Alloa had a set piece, so where I was sitting in Broadwood, I wasn't too far from the Alloa dugout, and Scott Taggart on two occasions had free kicks. There was one that he had, and it was a good chance, like Mendy, Graham, Dernan were all four inside the penalty box. Taggart stands over it and melts it over the crossbar, you know, into that sort of big grey wire fence behind the stand. And you could just see Ferguson was down on his hunches and just turns in, his face all screwed up, raging that this has been squandered. To be fair, that I think most managers would be like that. But I just think, well, with it, perhaps it's a bit accented with Ferguson because we saw what he was like at Clyde previously, and we know how he likes to change through players. But my advice for that: sign a left back. You'd be off to a good start, and just go 4-4-2. It's simple as that. That's my advice, Barry. If you're listening, sign a left back. Go 4-4-2. But Sean, we will drop down a league and jump back in time to Friday night to Ainslie Park, where Edinburgh City and Stenhousemuir competed in an absolutely abject game of football with no redeeming qualities whatsoever. The Citizens came out on top courtesy of Ryan Shanley's goal just after the half hour mark, and Tamor missed a second half penalty for the visitors. This is rubbish. This game was really, really bad. I think that because it was a Friday night, Fowler, Tony and Duncan came down to watch the match. I think midway through the second half, I actually had to apologise to them because of how low quality it was. And Tony Anderson, who is perhaps one of the most optimistic men on the planet, one of the most big-hearted, sees the best in everyone, actually turned and said, "Yeah, Telfer, you're right, that was shite." And when he's saying that you know you're on to a loser.
My main takeaway from this was that you appeared to be, at one point in the game, engulfed, would that be the correct word? Engulfed by some boisterous, I don't know, teenagers? And yeah, you didn't look overly keen. You looked quite scared.
I saw somebody, I think Craig Fowler put the photograph on Twitter, and somebody replied to the comments, "Is it Craig Telfer meeting the working class?" which I found quite funny. No, there was a young team, a bunch of Edinburgh City fans. In fact, they weren't just Edinburgh fans, they were Edinburgh fans, Partick Thistle fans, Falkirk supporters, a real sort of odds and sods, like a real Bass Street Kids vibe to it. Were there, and they were really nice. They watched, they listened to the podcast, they watched A View for the Terrace. They asked us for selfies, which is very obliging to do. But that one, Fowler took it, and I just thought, well, let's pull a funny face for a laugh. But no, it was good to see them, and it's always good to meet people who enjoy the show.
And it was turned into a number of reasonably amusing Photoshop efforts.
That's because Tony Anderson was in the background there with his sunglasses, somebody looking like a shaven-headed Dr. Robotnik. favourite one, though, was I think it was somebody had photoshopped my grimace onto the horse rider, you know, the Olympian who was doing the modern pentathlon, and lost control of the horse. And the horse has got this big glacket look in its face, and she's got this horrible grimace. Somebody done that, which was very funny. But enough about that, Sean. What did you make of this game? Could you make anything of this game because of the way the sun was hanging in the highlights?
So I think the highlights lasted about 9 minutes, and for approximately 5 of those 9 minutes, I couldn't see anything.
No, when the ball went down the far end,
because the camera was facing straight into the blaring sun. Yeah. So I couldn't see who gave away Stenny's goal. I presumed it was I thought it was a right back, but I presume, I don't think it was. Was it?
It was
Nicky Jameson, who appears to be giving away a goal a game these days.
You're absolutely right. I think that but prior to Jameson coming in, I looked at that Stenhousemuir team. I think that's a team that can challenge for promotion, perhaps, but it needs a solid centre back. It needs someone to come in there and partner Sean Crichton. And when Jameson was made available from Alloa, I thought it's a great signing. I actually think that, quite interesting, Stenhousemuir had, you need, obviously, but if you get good centre backs, you're really onto a winner there. And the centre backs that Stenhousemuir had gone in for, Craig Howie was one, Ryan McGeever, Sean Crichton, who they eventually signed. Gregor Buchanan was one as well. And then they tried to get Jameson in, but he'd agreed a new deal with Alloa. But with Ferguson coming in, Jameson fell further down the pecking order and was made available. And he played very well in his debut in the League Cup against Partick Thistle. Since then, however, he was culpable. I'd say not directly culpable. He should have done a lot better against Stirling Albion on the opening game of the season when Mark Laird sort of like pirouetted into the penalty box and squared for Mark McNiff to get the opening goal of the game against Albion Rovers the following week. Was not, again, not responsible for a goal, but it could have been a catastrophic header. And at this, it was a channel ball that he came across to clear. All it required was just putting the laces through it and booting it back to where it came from. But he slices the clearance, falls on his arse, and then Ryan Shanley's in. And then the problem with that is Stenismuir's goalkeeper, Ryan Marshall, he's more or less like Vasilis Barkas, where if you simply kick the ball at him, it's more likely to go into the net. I don't think there's many Warriors fans have any confidence in the goalkeeper's ability to save shots. I mean, obviously, you're going to 1-1 with the goalkeeper, but I think you've got a responsibility there to sort of cover your near post and try to make him, if he's going to shoot, it's going to have to go around you. And if it does, if the ball's bent around you, then you'd be like, well fair enough, because it's a really good finish. But he chose to protect his near post, but stand with his legs wide open. And the ball just went right through his legs and into the back of the net. And I think that there's a few players we can come on and talk about Stenismuir, but he's definitely not been, so on the evidence so far, haven't really been impressed with Ryan Marshall at the Warriors yet.
And I'm glad you were able to describe that, because when I watched it on the highlights, it was like a deleted scene from Sunshine. I could not couldn't make anything out at all. So you're saying that though, but from what I did see, I thought, now I'm probably going to mispronounce this. I presumed it was Brian Schwake, but it sounded like on the highlights they're pronouncing it Schwake. Is that right?
Schwake. I thought it was Schwake as well.
So that's Edinburgh City's new goalkeeper.
Yes.
I thought he had a very good game. The both Edinburgh City commentators, well, the main commentator, thought he was the man of the match. And I think you can maybe argue that Stenny probably deserved more than 0 points for the game. I thought they arguably like the better team.
No. I actually think it was it's actually something. A draw might have been the fairer result in that. I mean, Schwake did very well. I suppose he did very well. I mean, it was for Tamor's penalty. You got to say it was actually a very poorly hit penalty, because Schwake moves to his left, then Tamor hits it in that direction. So it was very, very easy for the goalkeeper to save. Other than that, he wasn't really called upon. Like, let's say the Warriors were really poor, but so were Edinburgh City. I thought it was. This was a match between two sides that I think have really got a lot of work to do if they want to consider themselves top four sides. This Edinburgh side, I'll be honest, at my vantage point, I was behind the goals on the mound. I think Ainslie Park's a really bad place to watch football. I think it's one of the worst grounds in the country. However, on the grassy mound behind the goals, it was actually really good. And particularly when Stenismuir were attacking, I was paying more attention to the Warriors than I was Edinburgh City. But I didn't see anything from them to suggest that wow, this is a really good side. They certainly look poorer than the side that finished last season. I don't really think that anyone stood out. I think Callum Tapping put in some nice touches. Schwake, as we mentioned, had a good game. And I think that after they got their goal, Stenismuir were prompted really to start playing on the front foot and open themselves up a little bit. And I think that if they were perhaps a bit more clinical in front of goal, John Robertson, who they've got on loan from St Johnson, missed a really good chance, actually. He was put 1-1 and really pulled his shot wide quite badly. At least should have forced the goalkeeper into a save. They don't look like a good side, this Edinburgh team. On the basis, I mean, it was one game, but what I've seen so far for them from the start of the season, I don't think they'll challenge them for the top four. And I'd also say I don't think Stenismuir will challenge for the top four now either.
Do you think that, so you're suggesting that they're not going to challenge the top four, do you think they could potentially be in bother?
I do.
Because I think, is it the next two fixtures are against Cowdenbeath and Kelty? Is that right?
Yeah, I would say going into the game against Cowdenbeath, you've got Cowdenbeath, a team who missed the game against Stranraer last weekend because they had players isolating because of the coronavirus. So they didn't play last weekend. And I'm not sure if they're able to train at all this week because they had players absent. So if you're going into a game at home against one of the lesser likes in the division who haven't played or haven't trained for a number of days, over a week, if you can't beat them, then you're in bother. And
but do you not think, I agree with what you're saying. However, I think Cowmeath might have one of the better squads in League Two, bearing in mind. I watched them against Kelty. And
yes, they looked all right against Kelty.
I think they missed a penalty against Kelty. And for large kind of swathes of that game, they gave Kelty a lot of ball. I think Cowmeath's got a good team.
Yeah, I agree. So that's not to do Cowan a disservice, but I'm saying that traditionally Cowan are one of the lesser lights in that division. I don't expect Cowan Beef to get into the playoffs, for instance. I think they'll be fifth or sixth or seventh. I think they'll be mid-table this season, Cowan. But if you're, it's like, as an expression I've used before, if you're serious about doing well, then a team that haven't trained for a week and didn't play last week, you have to beat them. You know, at home, that you have to beat them. And Senesme are facing the prospect of losing the count, and they could get battered by Kelty Hearts. That's five games and 1 point. That's a dismal start to the season. And I was looking through the Senesme team. I was quite cautious about, I don't want to act smart after the fact because that's just stupid. And the number of times that on this podcast or on a view for the terrace, things I've said that have turned out to be wrong, there's innumerable. So, you know, you don't want to act smart after the fact. And it's early days as well, so I mean, there's still plenty of time to turn it around. I was quite cautious about Stephen Swift becoming the manager and thinking that he'll recruit loads of guys from the Lowland League, and that has been the case. The guys from the Lowland League, from what the evidence that I've seen, that from the BSC players, only one, you could say, has been a qualified success so far, and that's Ross Lyon, the right back. He was missing against Edinburgh because he was injured. He's good at going forward, but he can be got at going the other way. The rest of them, like Ryan Marshall, we've discussed. Jamie Mills was really poor against Stirling Albion on the opening day and hasn't been seen since. Michael Anderson, really going to be nothing more than a squad player. Ryan Tierney, the sort of player who you sign if you've only got like £10 left in your budget and you need another player.
But the thing is that it looks like you're kind of mentioning names that are that you don't feel are good enough for Steny, but it looks like Steny's got a massive squad. It looks like they've got a big squad.
They do, Sean. That's that, and there's one of the problems. So we were talking about the guys there that have signed from the Lowland League from BSC Glasgow that I've not been particularly impressed by. I think that the defence, for instance. And this was something I found quite confusing. Prior to the game against Dundee United B that took place last Tuesday, or last Wednesday, one of the two, last Tuesday, Stephen Swift brought in a right-back, John Craig from Kilmarnock, and he's already got two left-backs at the club, Bernard Call and Jamie Mills, as we mentioned there. And he was asked about it after the Dundee United game, and he said, it was a position I felt that we needed something more from. So Craig played against Dundee United B, apparently he did okay, I didn't see the game, but then was dropped for the match against Edinburgh City and Bernard Call's back playing. And then, weirdly, so you've got three left-backs at the club now. Weirdly, Ross Lyon is the only orthodox right-back at the club. He's injured, so Craig Reid, who's a centre-back, has to play there instead. And Reid didn't really offer much going forward and didn't really offer much going the other way. 10 minutes in, an Edinburgh City player ran past him, and Craig Reid just grabbed him, you know, because he couldn't catch him and got booked for it. So you've got a position now where you've got three left-backs, five centre-backs and one right-back. And you can't be in a position that's quite like Barry Ferguson at Clyde, where it's like, if someone has a bad game, well, I'm just going to sign another player in this position. We could end the transfer window with 46 players in our books. Like just several players in one position. So imagine there'll be players leaving, but there is a big squad. But the problem is that we've talked about the guys that are signed from non-league football. I think the SPFL players, the more established players, really need to pull their weight. Mentioned Jameson, Sean Crichton, it wasn't in the highlights, but he actually did something similar to Jameson minutes after that. He went out to the right back position to cover and clear and missed it. And luckily Edinburgh overcomplicated it and missed their chance. But then you're looking since from midfield, Nat Wedderburn takes about three decades to bring the ball under control. It's like that new M. Night Shyamalan film, Old. But instead of going to a beach and aging, just try watching that Weatherburn control of football. you've got him in centre midfield. You've got Ross Forbes, not known for his ability to get around the pitch. The only player that's come in that I think that, wow, he's been really, really good has been Robert Thompson. Like, Thompson looks class. Thompson has been really, really good playing that sort of like left-hand side, wide target man position. And he really did his best to try to shake the team up and get something from them. But, well, I think the lowland league guys are effectively to build a squad. You know, you're not going to have 11 Robert Thompsons because that's just impractical and too expensive. So you are going to have like squad players in there. And I think that when the big players aren't performing, the guys that you've got on the bench perhaps aren't quite good enough to step up and take their position. So it's a funny thing for Stenhousemuir at the moment, and we really do need to see improvement from the more established characters. And I think that Stephen Swift and his team of coaches do have a job in their hands, because if they're not able to pull themselves out in the tailspin, then we could be in for a long, hard season. Who knows? Stenhousemuir could beat Cowdenbeath and they could beat them playing good football, and it might be a completely different discussion. But I'm very cautious. I thought Stenhousemuir would finish top four. I think that we just need to stabilise and then move on from there.
I suppose the good thing is, for next season, Stephen Swift has experience of the Lowland League, so that could go well.
Yeah, you know how many people have made that joke, Sean? I mean, a few people I've seen have made that joke. But yeah, I mean, it's just a concern. It's just a concern, and that's the thing that people who say there's not much difference between the Lowland League and the SPFL, there is a big difference, man. There is a big difference. Don't kid yourself. I mean, folk like, but Kelty Hearts, they could smash that division. It's like, well, Kelty Hearts aren't really a Lowland League side. You know, they were a Lowland League club prior to their promotion, but that team of players, I mean, I think that anyone, you could take one look at that starting 11 and be like, well, that team could hold their own easily in League Two, as has proven to be the case. You're talking about like sort of young guys that have been discarded by Rangers, by Celtic, that kind of fall through the cracks and end up in the Lowland League, thinking if there has been a missed gem there. But in some instances, you might get like a Blair Lyons, for instance, you know, someone who did, or like an Anton Dowd's East of Scotland League, but some guys who perhaps have played at that level that have just not really had a chance. But then I've yet to see that. Stenhousemuir's recruitment from the Lowland League traditionally had been poor hither to Stephen Swift coming in, and I've really not yet seen anything for these players to suggest they can cut it. And I really hope to be proven wrong. And no one likes I told you so. If something goes bad, like somebody sitting in the Twin Towers, for instance, on the September 11th, and a hijacked jetliner is about to fly into them, saying, well, I told you this was going to happen. No one needs to hear that. No one needs to hear that. Somebody sitting on the Challenger after that's taken off, and somebody's like, well, 13 seconds into it, it's like, well, this isn't very... It's not helpful to anyone. Not helpful to anyone.
That's quite the comparison. The Twin Towers, the Challenger disaster, and Stenhousemuir's 2021-22 League Two campaign.
Sean, when you and I catch up next Thursday, I really hope we've got something positive to say about it. It just hasn't worked out quite well. I mean, we've not... The League Cup performances, you know, that's something after when we convened, the League Cup performances I thought were very, very positive. And I saw stuff there to suggest that if you're I mean, albeit sort of shadow sides, but if you're going toe-to-toe with Partick Thistle, that's a good sign. If you're playing well in spells against St Mirren, that's a good sign. But other than the sort of a wee spell in the second half against Albion Rovers, when they drew two each, where they scored both their goals, other than that, we've not really seen anything that's been impressive about them. And it's a worry. It's a worry.
What about a team that we said we were worried about and we've been pulled up about it on Pine Bothell?
Yeah, that's quite interesting, Sean. A fan accused us of, just because we thought Annan might have a difficult season, we were accused of Central Belt bias.
I only read that comment today. It wasn't quite as bad as I thought it might have been, but I wasn't entirely sure how we could be accused of Central Belt bias. Bear in mind, every single summer, Annan's How Annan's season is going to go is entirely dependent on how well they've recruited from Queen of the South reserves.
Yes.
Carlisle's reserves.
Yes.
And Workington Reds.
Yes. I was going to say that sort of like the in names like Morpeth Gentlemen's Club, some of the guys they signed players from. Chucking that to mix in Stephen Swinglehurst, and that's basically an athletic side. But you've got to say, fucking fair play to them, because they were good against Stranraer. Albeit, in fact, actually, something I've noticed, we mentioned you weren't there, it was myself and Fowler and Andy Harrell last week. We said that how like Annan played well and took their goals well. They were abetted by some dreadful defending. I think the defending from Stirling Albion in this match was somehow worse, and is perhaps so far the worst defending. I think all three goals, the worst defending I have seen from any club so far in the SPFL. I thought last week was bad against Stranraer. This is even worse.
I particularly liked the first one in terms of Blair Curry's, Stirling Albion's goalkeeper, Blair Curry's, his indecisiveness about what to do. Will I'll come out my box? Will I kick it? Will I back into my box? Will I not do anything? And he went for the last option. I'll just not do anything. Incredible.
The all three goals, I think it was the second one I actually properly laughed out loud at. This one, I had a long ball into the box, and I'm sure if Blair Curry had stood his ground, the ball would have come to him. If Blair Curry had charged out and headed it, it would have gone miles away. If he'd kicked it, it would have probably gone even further. But he chose a combination of kicking and controlling it, and he tried to take the thing on his knee. I don't know what he was. I honestly don't know what he's thinking. It must be one of those things that when your brain just draws a complete blank, and it's only till like minutes afterwards that when you try to make sense of something that you can't. And you got to say fair play to Chris Johnson, because he recognised that the goalkeeper was drawing a blank, and they just decided to back into him. And at that point, Curry's just all over the place. You got to say credit to Johnson, because his finish is actually really good. You can see he's fallen off balance before he hooks a shot into the net. And I think it's might have been Ross McGeachie or Jordan McGregor, one of the two of them, that's coming back into cover, and it just sails over him and into the net. So it's very well taken. But you've got to say, really, really poor for Curry. And I think Curry was at fault last week for a goal. I didn't watch all the highlights, but there was a Jamie Bar-Jonas was getting a lot of credit for this ball that he clipped in. So I think it was for Nathan Austin. Might have been Nathan Austin, but for a ball that he clipped in. And it's like, it's a great ball in. But Curry just stands there and doesn't come out to get it. And if he comes out and even makes an attempt, Austin's not got a chance, but he just stands there and the ball sails over the defender's head right to his foot. And I think that when you see how well Cammy Binney is doing at Albion Rovers, I think he was man of the match in the 2-2 draw against Stenhouse Muir the previous week. Do you really think that Kevin Rutkiewicz has made a bit of a mistake there by retaining Curry and letting Binney go? Because
it feels like a downgrade. I mean, Stirling Albion in general look like they have all the right ingredients, or probably just enough ingredients to be a top four team. However, the fans are probably getting a wee bit fed up of Rutkiewicz, because performances like Saturday, where they were, very much second best against Annan, those kind of performances, they come along all too often. I know they lost Andy Ryan over the summer, which was, that feels like a move that came out of the blue. And that's, considering how well Andy Ryan started the season for Hamilton, you can see that's kind of must have a kind of massive, that leaves a massive hole in their strike force. However, looking at League Two, I always feel like Stirling Albion look like they have a reasonable budget, but they never seem to punch their weight at League Two, and it looks like they've started the season in the same way.
Okay, Sean. Right, I'm going to give you an imaginary scenario there. Picture the scene. You're going back to like May 2021, a few months ago. You're Kevin Rutkiewicz. You're poor end to the season, and you've had a chat with your chairman. Says we're going to give you this amount of money to put this group of players together. Off you go. So you make your signings. You put your team together, you go in pre-season, you go go-karting, you go paintballing, you're building up your team spirit there. Everyone's getting on very well. First league game, you do very well in the League Cup, sadly not enough well to get into the next stage, but a good performance nonetheless, and you beat Stenhouse Muir on the opening day. Everything's going very well. The team are absolutely happy. Next week, you lose at Kelty Hearts. Disappointing, you didn't play at your best, but that's okay because Kelty are expected to win the division. Then you've just conceded a goal to Annan Athletic that was really poor. That was your goalkeeper's fault. You're shouting at your team, guys, keep it tight. Don't lose your concentration. Dale Carrick takes centre. He passes it to Ray Grant. Ray Grant probably takes one touch too many. Ian Anderson comes out to close him down. Chris Johnson joins him. And then out of nowhere, your left back, Martin McNiff, comes over, slight tackles it, takes out Chris Johnson and takes out Ray Grant, allowing Ian Anderson to run unheeded at your defence, cut inside to his left foot and shoot, toe-poking it into the corner of the net. How do you think Kevin Rutkiewicz was feeling in that minute when he sees the ball nestling in the back of the net?
It was a very, very funny goal. I think, to be honest, the bit I liked about it the most was I've already said that Annan Athletic's commentary is one of my favourite things that I've about lower leagues this season. But because the main commentator, he just makes noises. Just makes noises all through the game. I don't think the first game I watched, he had a co-commentator, but he did for this game. And I don't know, are you aware of Moonlighting, which was Bruce Willis and Sybil Shepherd's kind of late 80s, early 90s?
Yes, he made that before Die Hard. I'm sure that was when he was cast as John McClane. A lot of people were surprised because he was a comedy actor.
Yeah, so they had a bit in Moonlighting where they would talk really quickly over one another. And it was supposed to signal that they were cute together and there was a potential romance in the offing. When Annan scored their second goal on Saturday, both the main commentator and the co-commentator started to describe the goal, but they weren't talking to each other. They were just both simultaneously describing the goal. And then you think at one point, one of them will stop talking and just allow the other one, probably the main commentator, to describe the action. But it just goes on for ages and you can't make out anything that anybody's saying. They're just both shouting over each other. It was very, very funny.
I watched their Stirling Albion's highlights because as soon as I switched on, Annan's was the shorter of the two. As soon as I saw that pixel lock camera, I smashed the YouTube. I smashed the browser closed so hard I damaged my laptop. I will not watch automated camera stuff. And so I'm sorry I missed the commentary. But the goals were really bad. And I mean, what do you think of the third goal, Tommy Goss's goal? This was dreadful as well because it was I think it was Aidan Smith goes up for a header in the halfway line and the ball slides through to Goss inside the halfway line. Adam Cummins comes along and you think at that point with McGregor out of position, you think Cummins would just take one for the team and just clatter him because it's 2-1 at that point. You've got still a chance to get into the game. But he seems to miss him. He seems to just not track him at all. And Goss goes in. Goss is a big, strong boy. He was able to hold off McGregor and is a good finish. But that was another really, really rotten goal to lose.
Defensively, Albion looked kind of weak, meek. And I mean, as much as I'm saying that they have a team that and a budget that you would expect them to be at the top end of the table, I'm kind of looking at the starting 11 and I'm thinking, maybe they don't. Certainly defensively. I think maybe from midfield onwards, they might be okay. Although that said, I thought Dylan Makin looked big. For a League Two footballer, he looked big.
Bear in mind, just a couple of years ago, he was playing full-time football with Livingston. He was one of Paul Hartley's signings at Falkirk. No wonder Falkirk got relegated if you're putting your trust in someone like him. I thought Makin was really poor. I think Makin has his uses. He's quite a limited player, but he does have his uses. But you certainly didn't see any of that against Annan. For a guy like his size to be pushed around by Stephen Swinglehurst and to go down looking for phantom free kicks and penalties, it's just you're not really getting much from him. And I think that as good a player Dale Carrick is, the reason he's playing down at that level is because he's had problems with his fitness. And I think you're right in terms of what you said about Andy Ryan. I certainly don't think anyone really expected to see him playing for Hamilton Academical. There's perhaps still time for them to address their forward line, Stirling Albion. But I would say, I agree with your point about your defence. Stirling Albion's defence. I think on the opening day of the season against the Warriors, Kyle Banner looked really, really good. Really did well to keep Tom Orr quiet. And I'm surprised that he's not starting, because I had him in there. I think he's quite versatile and he's quick off the mark as well. And I think that had it been him in there, I don't think Tommy Goss, I mean, who knows what might have happened, but I don't think Tommy Goss would have found his path to goal as straightforward as you might have done. I think Banner would have been able to catch up with him and perhaps hold him off for someone else. But yeah, your overall points about Stirling Albion, it just really feels like since the 17-18 season when they finished in third place, it's really been a couple of years adrift for them. You know, I would imagine if you're signing guys like Ray Grant, for instance, you do have a decent budget, but they don't really seem to be getting value for money. And you do wonder, I said that at the start of the season, that Rutkiewicz might be the most under pressure manager in the league if things don't go well. And I'm not really seeing anything to change my mind from that.
I don't know if you've seen it, but I watched Forfar versus Kelty. So I would have, at the start of the season, I probably would have expected Kelty to win the league, Forfar to maybe be in the kind of playoff shout. And I think Cowdenbeath will do okay this season. And I know you maybe don't agree with that. But my three for the playoffs would have been Forfar, Stirling Albion and Cowdenbeath. Forfar and Kelty look like a really, really good game. Two good teams. Kelty probably just about edged it, but we know the strength and depth and quality that Kelty have. But in Nathan Austin, they have somebody that will probably score 30 goals this season. I think Matty Aitken for Forfar looked excellent, but even in general, Forfar looked like they had a decent starting 11. You compare both of them to that Stirling Albion team, and they looked light years ahead of them. So as you said, Rutkiewicz might be under a bit of pressure, and it's a really poor start to the season. I can't imagine the board would have that much patience with them, considering how much you presume that they've spent on a budget this season.
It's quite interesting, Sean. At the start, we were accused of central belt bias, so we're going to talk about Annan Athletic, and we spent the whole time talking about Stirling Albion instead. I got to say, I mean, Annan, that said, that's two really good wins in the bouts where they've both scored three goals in the games, and I think that they didn't look too hot on the opening day against Forfar Athletic, but you've got to be really impressed by them. I don't think... Who knows? I mean, they're playing Albion Rovers at the weekend. Maybe Albion Rovers will defend equally as dreadfully. But one of the things that when I enjoy watching the highlights is just they pressed very aggressively. And I know it's easy to do that when you're playing well and you're confident and you just scored two goals like in the space of about 30 seconds of one another. Everyone wants to get on the ball, but I thought that was really good. Even Chris Johnson, who certainly seems to be playing his best football at Annan. I know he had a good spell at Kilmarnock immediately when he started, never quite lived up to that, but he really seems to have found the home at Gallabank. And him pressing, Aidan Smith pressing, Tony Wallace pressing, all guys that really want to be on the front foot, that's good. And couple that with the old war horses at the back and Paul Watson and Stephen Swinglehurst, there's a good basis there. I don't think they'll be able to keep it up over the course of the season, but you really have to give them credit for the way they've started, particularly in the last two games.
You mentioned Chris Johnson. I do think, with the greatest will in the world, I think League Two might be his level. I remember when Clyde came up, he had a brilliant season for Clyde, but he went in League Two. And then when he came up to League One, I think he maybe started the season quite well.
He'd been at Annan, he had a really good season at Annan. When Clyde got promoted, him and Tony Wallace both transferred Clyde.
So he did. No, you're right. He's flatter to deceive at any level higher than League Two. But it's so strange, because when he plays at League Two level, he looks like he is, at times, above that level, but any time he has the opportunity to prove that, he doesn't really seem to do it. But certainly at League Two, for Annan, he looks like a bit of kind of, like he can sprinkle a bit of kind of quality and kind of stardust on a game. And he's the kind of player who, I mean, he started the season really well. I think he's already got a couple of goals. I think he had an assist for Ian Anderson's goal as well at the weekend. So if they can keep him fit, then Annan might have a decent season.
Yeah, I'd say so. And something that's I've always said before, I think that they're a great place to go and visit. It's one of the Gallabank's one of my favourite grounds in the country, and I think that they've got the setup off the pitch to make an impact in the SPFL. They just haven't got it quite right on it. And the fact that Colin McMenamin's in there as Peter Murphy's assistant means I wish them all the best. I absolutely love Colin McMenamin. He's a brilliant.
I've never been to Annan. I've never been to Cove. And I've never been to Kelty. That's the three venues I still have to visit.
I've quite fancy going to Starks Park. Maybe next time Stenismuir are away and Raith Rovers are at home, I'll come. I'd say I'll come and sit next year. I'll just come. You don't. No pressure on you to have to entertain me. I wouldn't.
If you are coming to Kirkcaldy, I will make sure I sit next to you.
Excellent. Well, that's great. Well, I think we'll wrap it up there, Sean. Shall we?
Yes, that's absolutely fine.
Excellent. Well, there you go. There's your three games. That's your whack. Sean and I are going to record a Patreon where we are going to be talking about Sean's all-time favourite Raith Rovers team. Not necessarily his favourite 11 players from his time supporting, but his favourite team, his favourite season, his favourite era from supporting the Rovers. So tune in for that. But, we forgot to put a break in. Listen, drink beer 52. Simple. Craig Fowler always asks us to put a break in.
But before we started, we literally said, right, we must. As soon as we do the intro, we'll have a wee break for an advert, and we've not done it.
Yeah, so drink beer 52. I drink it all the time.
I cannot stop drinking beer 52. It is delicious.
Yeah, anytime I'm at the gym, I take a beer 52 with me. When I'm seeing my grandparents, I take a beer 52 with me. When I'm at bar mitzvahs, I take a beer 52 with me. So yeah, it really is as versatile as that. So get sucking, because that stuff's really good. And Sean, we didn't even talk about my flat. We've done a whole podcast without mentioning it.
You've got a bed now. You still don't have any furniture at all, and it's not arriving until October.
Yes, aye. So the bed's fantastic. I'd say that. I'd highly recommend getting a bed if you don't have one already.
If you don't have a bed, I would recommend purchasing one.
Aye, the bed's fantastic. I think it's the mattress. It's a Simba mattress. So it's one of those ones that's developed by NASA or something.
Quite expensive, aren't they? That somebody's doing all right.
Sean, the way I see it is you spend one third of your life lying horizontally, staring up at the ceiling. So you want to do it comfortably, you know. So that's why I bought a mattress. I could make a joke there as well about the chicks, but no, there's none of that. It really is a pitiful existence, a pitiful, loveless, desireless existence. But anyway, the bed's very comfortable. I had to buy a new fuse box last week. That was expensive. I've got nice lighting in the bedroom, but the furniture isn't coming until the start of October. Thank that. You can blame the coronavirus and Brexit, why not, as well, for that. We're out of the European Union. Some people might enjoy that, but that means my furniture's taking fucking ages to arrive. So I won't be here till the start of October.
That's never put that in the side of your bus.
Aye, exactly. Aye, Boris Johnson's big bus of lies. Aye, see, what we put on it, Colt teams will benefit Scottish football. Great, Rangers signing this 19-year-old jobber for Colombia to play in their B team. Aye, that's fantastic. Can't wait for him to run it against Moldova next month. Hopeless. Stick that, and then stick, your furniture will be delivered quickly. Well, it's not. It's not been delivered quickly, and that's why I'm still in here. They're barely going to the living room. Nobody cares. Listen, we're just rambling. Let's get this wrapped up. Thank you very much. Thank you for your support. Listen to us on Patreon because it's going to be good fun. Sean, thank you very much.
No worries. Cheers.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.